morning, everybody. Welcome back to the second hour of Love Babs Love Talk. I'm Babs Rose Ivy. I've been excited to have this conversation today because we're in Connecticut. We are 10 years and the 10th anniversary of repealing the death penalty here. And that's a big deal. And I didn't realize 10 years had come and gone that quickly. So this morning I have Victoria Coward, whose son was murdered in New Haven, and Colleen Cunningham, a senior campaign strategist for Equal Justice USA. Each of them were key players in the Connecticut death penalty repeal effort. Good morning and welcome, y'all.
Good morning.
Unmute yourself, Victoria. So how are you, Colleen?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to remember the momentous occasion of Connecticut repeal.
Yes. So we're 10 years out. We're 10 years here. What do we know so far?
Yeah. Hi, Vicky. I think you're unmuted now.
Yes. Hi, Victoria. Miss Coward. I know technology can be tricky, girl. I know. So what do we know, Colleen Cunningham, 10 years out?
Yeah, I think that we know a lot about what it was that made the Connecticut campaign so successful. And one of those components is here with us, with Ms. Coward. The Connecticut campaign was so historic in the way that murder victim family members came together to really shine a light on the failings of the death penalty. Another thing that was so crucial to ending the death penalty in Connecticut was the leadership of Black voices around the state and the Black community calling out the racism within the system. And then 10 years later, we know that those components that were so powerful in Connecticut are continuing to be impactful, not just in death penalty repeal efforts, which they have been. Connecticut was the fourth state to legislatively repeal the death penalty, and now there have been 11. So several states have sort of looked at the Connecticut campaign and taken those lessons and had their own success. And we also know that the death penalty is just one piece of an incredibly broken criminal legal system, and that some of the things that helped end the death penalty in Connecticut have helped us have additional progress in breaking down some parts of the system that fail us.
So, Ms. Coward, how has this been for you to sort of be a part of the repeal of the death penalty when you have firsthand experience of losing a loved one to a crime?
Well, it's been a joy to work with the JUSA, number one. My son's death has open up the door for me to be able to share my story and to let people know about the death penalty, which is, I still have conversations about it now, and I'm in Charlotte now, so.
I know Charlotte, the Queen City. I went to Barbara
yes,
Scotia
ma'am.
Down in Concord and spent some time at Johnson C.
Yeah.
Smith, so I know Charlotte.
Yeah, and I was something bad come something good, and I'm just willing to help wherever I can.
And so do you still feel, I imagine you do, that you made the right decision in sort of helping repeal the death penalty in Connecticut?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Nothing's changed.
Okay. All right, so Kelly, talk to us about, I think the thinking was 10 years ago that when we repeal the death penalty, it would help us think about how we reimagine other legislation around punishment. Has that happened? Is that happening?
Yes, it has. It has, and it is. And so I work for Equal Justice USA, which is a national organization. So we're all over the country, and we're really looking to Connecticut as one of those states that's really doing incredible work. So there's two things we need to do with our broken system. It's tearing down the parts that don't work and building up the parts that do work. And the death penalty is such an incredibly broken piece. And We believe it's so important to get rid of the death penalty because it helps us change the conversation. The death penalty is just about punishment. If we care about prevention, if we care about healing, if we care about real safety for communities, we're having a very different conversation. So when we end the death penalty, we can highlight all of those conversations we should be having about what public safety actually looks like. And getting rid of the death penalty, it's like it takes the 500-pound elephant out of the room. The death penalty sucks up so much attention, so much money. Legislators love to debate it. And if we can just take it off of the table, it really creates space for some of these other more transformative things to happen. A great example, since the repeal legislation in Connecticut was passed 10 years ago, there's been a 44% reduction in the prison population in Connecticut, and the crime rate has gone down. So we look at those two things as related. We were able to change the conversation about what our criminal legal system should be doing. And when we say just punishing shouldn't be a priority, that creates space for us to look at some other things. And Connecticut's done a beautiful job of closing some prisons and recognizing that there are better ways to have public safety than just locking up and focusing on punishing people.
So Ms. Coward, when you made that decision to sort of walk this path, how did you talk about this with your family, and how do you talk about it with other families? Because in this 10 years time, we've seen unimaginable crimes committed.
Could you say that part again? I didn't hear something you said.
That's all right. I think, in the 10 years since you've been a part of this, how do you talk about this moving forward in the present? Because in 10 years time, we've seen so many other heinous crimes. We've seen somebody walk into a church and kill people. We've seen people walk into schools and kill kids. I mean, we're still seeing young people killed on the streets. How do you talk about ending, not seeking revenge, or not, I don't even know if it's revenge, but not wanting to sort of add to more death? Like, I would imagine that's how you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I put myself out there. Like, I remember when they told me that my son was murdered, the first thing, to be honest, was that I wanted to find the guy that killed my son and then have him killed. You know, death penalty was going on then. I was like, oh, heck yeah, let's get him. I work with the police and detectives. Let's get him and let's put him in so he can get murdered too. But then I had to rethink everything because I know what it feels like to lose somebody that you love. So why would I want to put that on somebody else? That's somebody else's child. Another mother's going to feel what I feel. Another mother's going to go through what I go through. So I'm like, I couldn't do that. I couldn't live with myself like that. I mean, Tyler's gone. I can't get him back. But what I can do is share my experience, what I've been through, and then try to stop this death going on, this tit for tat. I mean, it's not helping anybody. And then after I found out all the money that it takes to murder someone in jail, that could be used for reform of the victims of the homicide. Because once you lose somebody to homicide, you're never the same. My daughters now are 31 and one will be 32, and they're still not right. They're still going through. Mm-hmm. So that money right there for these families going through right now, it would be so good if that could be used to help these families.
Mm-hmm. And so in these 10 years, have you found any peace with the passing of your son? Have you made some peace with this turn of events?
I don't know if you call it peace. It's like I'm still trying to accept his death. I still catch myself talking about him like he's still here. Like Tyler did this, and I'm like, wait a minute, Tyler is gone, Vic. You got to get it together here. But you just learn to deal with it. Yeah, like the best way I can describe it is like you from that point on when they told me that night he was dead, I've been in a fog. And that's what I feel like I'm walking through, a fog that I will never come out of. Mm.
So Colleen, how do you talk about ending the death penalty in states that can't hear ending the death penalty? I think in South Carolina, they just reinstated firing squad kind of stuff. And that's backwards, isn't it?
Yeah. I think one of the incredible things about the effort to end the death penalty is how many different perspectives we are able to bring to the table from all walks of life. It truly is one of the issues in this country that I feel really optimistic about in terms of bipartisan cooperation. So people might be coming to this issue because they're concerned about the extreme racial injustice that's throughout the system, or they might be concerned about the fact that we get it wrong so often and so many innocent people end up on death rows. But there are other people who are at the table to work to end the death penalty because they just recognize it doesn't work. They see it as just purely a failed policy and a really expensive one at that. So the way I always like to start having the conversations with people is to find out where they are, find out what they know and what drives them. And if they're concerned about justice, the death penalty doesn't make sense for them. If they're concerned about their bottom line, the death penalty doesn't make sense because it's far more expensive than imprisoning someone for life once you factor in all of the appeals. So we've had some success. You know, we've seen legislation pass in red states. And you know, the Connecticut bill had 8 Republicans as voting for it. So there's a lot that can bring us together about recognizing how this punishment is failing. Mm.
And so does it make the case more compelling when you have someone like Ms. Coward? Talking about how she came to be about repealing the death penalty in Connecticut. Like, is that a convincing case to make?
I think that the leadership of Vicki and almost 200 other murder victim family members made all the difference in Connecticut, because they were able to, one, get people's attention by sharing their perspectives and bringing their hearts to the table. People want to hear from those impacted by violence. They recognize that those closest to the problems often are closest to the solutions. And so Vicki and others were able to come and explain not just their beliefs about the death penalty, but the realities about how the death penalty impacts all victims. Even if they want the death penalty, even if that's their hope, all victims are harmed by a system that is so uncertain, that is so prolonged, that you're told justice in your case is the execution of the offender. And then you wait years or decades through high publicity appeals. And in any state, the odds are that the case is going to turn into some other punishment, not an execution. So it's a terrible false promise that we make to murder victim family members. And when Connecticut repealed the death penalty, multiple legislators stood on the floor and said, "I didn't understand this." And then Vicki Coward came and sat down with me and helped me understand. And that's why I'm changing my vote. And that's why I'm supporting repeal. So the voices of murder victim family members are just crucial to this effort.
So Ms. Coward, has the person or persons that murdered your son, were they caught?
Oh, yes. He was caught 2 years later. He is currently in jail. He should be out maybe in another 25 years or so. Mm-hmm. And I did get a chance to speak to him. So
I was going to ask you if you were interested in talking to him. And
oh, yeah.
And what was that like?
Yeah, it was. He said that he acted out of anger. He said Tyler didn't deserve to die. And I told him if he was alive, he would forgive him. And I told him, I forgive him, but just make me a promise that when he gets out, he had his son was 5 years old in 2009. I'm like, your son is going to be an adult basically by the time you get out. So try to teach your son like not to do what you did and to go on with your son, because you'll have your son. I don't have mine. So do something in Tyler's memory.
Does that feel like, does that feel healing or feel like closure for you?
Well, you know what? I guess the only kind of closure, if you want to call it closure, is catching him. I felt good about that. But the closure for me, I don't think it ever comes. You know, you just know you caught the guy that did the murder, committed the murder. But if you can, like I said, if you can do something good out of something bad, it's like, just do it, you know, help somebody else. And that's all I'm about, trying to help the next family or the next person that is going through this. I think that the young man who did it, if he really feels bad, he will turn around and do something good in spite of what happened.
And have you spoken with his family at all? Like, have they reached out to you or said anything?
He lives in Puerto Rico. And the crazy thing is, he was sent from Puerto Rico to New Haven because he was doing badly in Puerto Rico. And within the matter of 2 years that he was here, he killed my son. So
Colleen Cunningham, the other day y'all had a conference of some sort with some folks that I know, Mike Lawler, Kika Matos. How did that conversation go? How did that event go?
I think it was lovely. I mean, we were able to have Vicky and Kika Matos and Mike Lawler, who were all integral to the effort to repeal the death penalty. I think a lot of us on the webinar were people who had been a part of the campaign, so it felt a little bit like a family reunion in the Zoom chat. We're all saying, oh, it's so nice to see you, and you know, remembering some of the murder victim family voices who were so involved in the campaign who've since passed. It was, you know, it was a beautiful moment for those of us so invested in the effort. And EJUSA's hope was to share the story of what made the Connecticut campaign so successful, and then to talk about what happens after we end the death penalty. You know, EJUSA is a national organization, and we're working to build approaches to violence that heal rather than harm. And the death penalty harms in every single way, but there are so many good things happening around the country that can bring healing. You know, Vicky epitomizes that so well, that story of how she wants the son of the young man who killed her son to do better and to be better. Like, that's a restorative approach. That's saying, we've had something horrible happen, but how do we move forward and build some healing? So it was really fun for us to all gather via Zoom. And, you know, anybody who's interested, we'll have that webinar on our website, ejusa.org. It was nice to remember.
You know, I serve on the board of Planned Parenthood of Southern New England, and we are at this place where Roe v. Wade is probably going to be overturned in a lot of, it will be overturned, except it's codified in Connecticut, and we put some things in place. But is there some fear moving forward that the tides will turn and the death penalty could come back? Because people feel some kind of way about that people can sort of rise up and say, you know what, we want this back.
Yeah.
You know, think about that. Do you, I mean, I believe anything is possible now that I've got firsthand a front row seat to this Roe v. Wade stuff. So it got me thinking about all the legislation that could be undone by political will.
You know, we are optimistic that in with every indicator, the public in this country is moving away from the death penalty for myriad reasons. You know, risk of executing the innocent, learning stories like Vicky's that help people understand the way the system damages murder victim family members, the exorbitant cost, and the fact that we get nothing for that expense. You know, it's not keeping us any safer. And so what we're trying to do at EJUSA is tell those stories about what a broken system it is, and then tell the stories of what better alternatives are, how there are programs and people who are building safety and healing in communities in meaningful ways. And so we're going to keep at it to keep telling those stories and raise up all the organizations that are doing the good work. And in terms of the death penalty, I feel really optimistic. Death sentences are at an all-time low because juries are far more likely to hand it out. Executions are, you know, for the most part, have been trending downward. States are recognizing that it's just not something they can afford. So I hope that the American people will continue to recognize that some of our baser urges to punish aren't serving anyone. You know, the last 10 days, right? We just had a mass shooting in Buffalo where a white supremacist teenager murdered 10 people shopping for groceries, and less than 24 hours ago, 21 people were gunned down by another teenager in an elementary school. I mean, we are hurting as a nation. And I think that we have opportunities to think about punishment and say, what can we do to these people who did something wrong? And if we do that, we're going to continue to see the problems that we have. Or we can recognize that we have problems with trauma in this country. We have problems with white supremacy in this country, that there are real fundamental changes that need to be made in order for us to grow and move forward. And I think that talking about the death penalty is one way we can begin to have some of those conversations.
Mm. So Ms. Coward, how do you honor your son's life? How do you do that now? And I mean, I know you live in Charlotte now, so mm-hmm. you don't live in Connecticut anymore. How do you honor him and think about him moving forward?
By doing what I'm doing now, continuing to talk about him. I met someone down here who just recently, it was like maybe a few weeks later, her son was murdered. And she had bought my book before her son died, and everything that I described, what I went through, how I felt, she said she's experiencing it. So it was like we were meant to meet. And it makes me feel good to be able to connect with victims of homicide so that they can know what to expect, and also still talk about, you know, the death penalty and ask them their views on it, and then explain to them like what it does, and just know you're going to be back and forth in court and it drags on for years. And after they think about it, then they kind of basically, I say 9 out of 10, they change their mind.
Mm. Okay. So so you doing this work is actually in memory of your son.
Definitely. And I believe in it. Believe in it. If not, I wouldn't do it. Believe me.
So what kind of support system do you have? Because this cannot be easy. Like if you get a call, somebody's son was murdered, somebody's child was murdered, and they want you to speak to them, or somebody finds you some kind of way. I don't know what the networking is like, but I'm sure the Equal Justice USA, the EJUSA people will find you and say, you know, hey, we got another case here and we'd like you to speak to this family. Like, how do you find the strength to sort of continue to do that?
It's like I get this burst of energy when I meet somebody that has gone through what I've gone through. It's kind of like therapy for me. You know what I'm saying? It's my passion to talk about this, because I've seen so many families just become dysfunctional. I mean, families separate, the whole nine. They don't know what to do. Some people wind up trying to commit suicide. It's really crazy. So you need to, I can't stay focused on myself, which I could, and wind up in depression or in the crazy house if I think about things like that all the time. But I refuse to do that. I'd rather help. and then feel like, okay, I did something good. And I know my son would be proud.
I like that. All right. So Colleen, what can everyday, ordinary, practical citizens do to help further this conversation and help press for this legislation across the country? What can folks do?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, I would love everybody who hears this to get involved with us at EJUSA, ejusa.org. That's one way. Folks outside of Connecticut who maybe there is an active effort to undo the death penalty in their state, there are local coalitions working in almost every state. But I would really invite folks to get involved with us at EJUSA because we are getting rid of the system, the parts of the system that don't work, like the death penalty, and reimagining what real safety and healing and accountability could look like in our communities. And how do we invest in violence prevention and intervention that is actually effective? And how do we raise up the voices of those directly impacted, but like Miss Vicky and so many others around the country who have been doing the work? We do know what prevents violence in this country. We just need to build a movement of people who are willing to call that we invest in the people doing the work, the local leaders in Black and Brown communities who have been pounding the pavement for decades, organizing in their churches, creating accountability within their community. We need to get those groups the resources they need, because we're seeing now, we're finally starting to get a little bit of data that shows that these programs in Black and Brown communities that have existed for decades or centuries, you know, they go back to Indigenous practices, they work. We just need to start investing in them. So, you know, we invite you to become a part of our movement at EJUSA to help us reimagine a better criminal legal system.
Ms. Cower, before you go, have you had opportunity to talk to legislators, people who make the laws around punishment and incarceration matters? Have you had any opportunity to talk to those kinds of folks?
Not down here, but I look forward to it. If the door opens, believe me, I'll walk in.
We'll hold you to that, Vicky.
I'm not trying to make more work for you, Ms. Cower. I'm not trying to make more work for you. All right, so Connecticut is I don't know if it's celebrating the right word, acknowledging, remembering its 10-year anniversary of repealing the death penalty. So how do we mark this? How should we be looking at this moment?
What a beautiful question. What we wanted to commemorate at EJUSA was to reflect on what made the campaign successful and the progress that we've made. And I think that it's a good opportunity to look to the future. There is still so much broken about our justice system or our injustice system. We still have too many people in prison. We still have too much violence in our communities. We still are not getting the resources to those best able to address that violence. And so I think we can in some ways celebrate how far we've come, and hopefully that can give us energy to keep working and fighting to build a better future for all of us.
Ms. Cower, is there any last remarks you want to make before I let you go back to work? Because I'm assuming you're at work.
Yes, ma'am. Well, just keep the fight going. I mean, wherever it's needed, we need to keep the fight going and really look out for these families of homicide and try to help them find ways to heal themselves and to share our stories. I think that is one of the key things that we need to do instead of keeping quiet.
And Colleen Cunningham, any last remarks?
I would just like to thank you so much, Ms. Rawls-Ivey, for having this conversation, and to, as always, thank my dear friend, Vicky Coward, who has given so much of herself to this effort. It has been such an honor for me to get to organize alongside murder victim family members who have decided that they want to develop some purpose out of their pain and have been able to do that so powerfully and compassionately. And so thank you, ladies, so much. It's an honor to be in the struggle with you.
Well, I so appreciate y'all coming on, because I think I don't know how we could mark this this anniversary except look back and see how far we've come. So I appreciate it. So I just want people to know this is Victoria Coward, whose son was murdered in New Haven, and Colleen Cunningham, a senior campaign strategist for Equal Justice USA. And each of them were key players in the Connecticut death penalty repeal effort. And y'all know we had some amazing folks on this, you know, Connecticut Senator Winfield and State Rep Robin Porter and so many countless other people, Barbara Fair and all the activists that, you know, for years and years and years worked on this. To make this right. Happen in Connecticut. And so I appreciate you both. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. And I will hold you in my prayers, Ms. Coward. And Colleen, I look forward to the work that Equal Justice USA is doing.
Thank you so much.
And say hi to John Crane for me too.
Oh, I will.
John's so y'all best. Go in peace. And thank you for this wonderful conversation today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, Harry. It's been a day, and this is where we are. So it's not lost on me that we are having a conversation about the death penalty on the heels of so much violence in the last couple of weeks in this country. So listen, hug your loved ones close. Be kind where you can. And I'll see y'all tomorrow. I think I have guests tomorrow. I think I have guests. Oh, yes. Oh, perfect. Anru is back tomorrow. So, you know, Harry, we need some of that. we need some of the woosah. So he'll be here tomorrow.
I was waiting for Nora to kick in with the music, but I'll do it, Nora. So don't play. But I think she has the volume turned down.
Okay. All right.
Hold on. So good. So Anru,
yes,
is on tomorrow. Let me try and do this from here.
So Anru will be on tomorrow. And then pundits tomorrow. And I think Sam Ross Lee is joining us, sitting in for Markeisha tomorrow. So that should be
really
a lot.
And maybe I should show up. I don't think he likes me.
Well, I don't think he likes me either, but I'm coming to get my swag.
But it will be interesting. All right, so we'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, love thank you, Harry. Thank you, Nora.
Love Babs Love Talk on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, your home. Oh, wait, 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 wait.